Okay, so moving on, our next speaker is Niels Vaugerten from University College Dublin, who will tell us about gravitational wave flux for compact binaries through second order in mass ratio.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully you can see and hear me and see the slides. We've spent many years giving details of the second order calculation, and so it's really nice to be in a place where I'm going to give a talk with almost no details and instead just concentrate on results, in particular comparisons with numerical relativity. Everything I present today, although I'm the presenter, really all the credit goes to this group of collaborators, which is Leanne Durkin, Jeremy Miller, Adam Pound, Barry Wardell, and myself. So to get straight into it, I'm using slightly different notation to Adam, and so I'll just make it clear what that is. So the binary we're describing is two black holes. The primary has a mass, small m1. The secondary has a mass m2. I'll use capital M to denote the total mass of the binary. I'll define epsilon to be the small mass ratio, so m2 divided by m1. Q to be the inverse of that, the large mass ratio. As we know, it's useful to re-expand things in the symmetric mass ratio, which I denote by nu. And we can actually consider spin on the binary. So I will use chi1 and chi2 to be the dimensionless spin parameters of the two components. We're going to focus on the case of quasi-circular spin-aligned orbits, which have a frequency capital omega. And for the spin, we have a certain restriction that in some sense, the angular momentum on the individual components must be small. I'm not going to give any details other than to say exactly, just very quickly summarize what Adam said. You know, what we do is we expand the metric of the binary with this two timescale expansion. Here we have the slowly varying metric amplitudes and the rapidly varying phase. We'll then perform a decomposition into tensor spherical harmonics. And we'll plug this into here and then plug it into the Einstein equation. And that then gives us this set of field equations, which we resolve in the Lorentz gauge. So these E zeros are the linearized Einstein operator in the Lorentz gauge. These are the puncture fields that Adam talks about, kind of the crux of the calculation theoretically. This is the non-compact piece involving the first order terms. And this is the slow time derivative terms appear in here. And Leanne will talk about that after me. Okay, so I'm going to assume, we've solved these equations and got the metric perturbation. What do we want to do with that? So we're going to look at computing the gravitational wave flux for quasi-circular binaries. And so it's going to present and be clear about exactly what I mean when we compute the flux. And we're going to use this when we compute, this is how we compute the flux from NR as well as cell force, and we make the comparisons. So we take our asymptotic metric perturbation and we're going to decompose it into, in this case, spin weight minus two spherical harmonics. And then we have these individual modes of the metric perturbation, of the waveform even. We will split this into an amplitude and phase in the usual way. So this A is the amplitude and this phi is the phase. These are both real functions. And then we'll define the flux and the frequency in the usual way. So the flux is given from the time, computed from the time derivative of the amplitudes. And the frequency, which I'll denote by this lowercase pi, I'll call it pi bar, from the time derivative. In this case, we'll take it from the 2 to the 2-2 mode. Once we've defined our frequency, we can define a separation, which I'll call x bar. So this m is the total mass multiplied by this pi bar to the 2/3 power. And in the weak field, this frequency here is equal to the usual orbital frequency omega. And so you can also define, and in this case, these two are almost equal. And in the Newtonian limit, x bar becomes equal to the usual post-Newtonian x. And actually, it turns out the difference between this frequency and this frequency is very small, even at Q1. And so if you like, you can forget that it's even there and just think of x in the usual way. It's very small. It makes a small difference to any of the plots I will show in a moment. In order to look at the fluxes, it's actually useful to define the Newtonian normalized flux. So this is the F hat, which is going to be the total flux from here divided by the leading term in the post-Newtonian series for that mode. So as an example, the 2-2 mode, this is the leading term, the 32 over 5 x to the fifth nu squared. And this F hat then has the property that in the limit as x bar goes to 0, F hat tends to 1. So you'll see that on the plots that I show. So we apply this to the numerical relativity simulations to compute the flux and the numerical relativity data. And we will also write our self-force flux in the following way. So we actually make our calculation at a given omega and a given epsilon in our expansion, but I'm going to rewrite it, re-expand everything in terms of the symmetric mass ratio and write it as a function of this x bar. And so when I say first order flux, I mean this term in this expansion. When I say second order, I mean this term in this expansion, the second term. Okay, let's get straight on with the results. So first of all, let's look at the flux as computed for a non-spinning binary, or at least initially non-spinning, with a mass ratio 1 to 10, Q of 10. Here, I'm plotting the Newtonian normalized flux on the y-axis, and on the x-axis, I have x bar, this separation variable. So this over here on the left is the weak field, and this over here on the right is the strong field, and I've denoted the innermost stable circuit orbit in the test particle case with this dashed vertical line. This blue curve is showing the numerical relativity result from this particular simulation of the SXX catalog. And I'll discuss that in a second, but at the top, notice this is counting back the cycles from the peak of the waveforms. The waveform amplitude peaks over here. This is 2 cycles before the peak, 4 cycles, 10, and you see there's about 40 or 50 cycles in this particular simulation. And this is all shown here for the 2-2 mode. So on top of this, we can also plot the post-Newtonian results. This is the 3.5 PM result. You can see it tending over to 1 up here. You can see it almost matches the PN, numerical relativity result here. This is the unresummed PN. It's just the pure 3.5 PN. Obviously, with resummation, this could be improved. We can also plot the first order result, which is this dashed green curve. And it does worse than PN, but of course you wouldn't expect it to do very well. This is a Q of 10. But now, finally, we can plot the second order result. So at second order, we now have this red curve. And I make two observations. First, it agrees really nicely in the weak field with the post-Newtonian result, even though PN contains the higher order corrections in the mass ratio. But then in the strong field with numerical relativity, it agrees really nicely with numerical relativity right up until maybe a few cycles before the peak of the waveform. And in fact, it's basically within the error bars of the numerical relativity result. Actually, I forgot to say that these two plots for the numerical relativity, these are the two different extrapolation orders of the waveform, which we find is the dominant source of error we believe in the numerical relativity. So n equals 4 and n equals 3 for how they extract the waveform to infinity. The error here between the numerical relativity is less than 0.1%. Until you get close to the end here. Now here you see this tick, which is basically our result diverging as you approach the innermost stable circular orbit. And that's the breakdown of a 2x expansion. In future, we plan to put on the transition to plunge to smooth that out. Okay, so that's Q10. What can we do at Q? You know, that's pretty amazing that CellForce works there already, but let's really abuse it and look at Q1. So here's the same results now for about equal mass binary. The first order result has moved away, but you can see the second result still really quite well tracks the full numerical relativity simulation all the way again until about 5 cycles or so before the peak of the waveform, and when you get this divergence appearing again from the breakdown of the 2-time scale expansion. This is for the 2-2 mode. What about higher modes? Well, going back to Q equals 10, we can look at the L equals 3, M equals 3 mode. And here we can see there is a discrepancy between our results and the numerical relativity result. There's a slight gap here. So perhaps can we understand why that might be? And it turns out we probably would have expected this. So if you look at, for instance, the post-Newtonian series, you can see that the order new to the fourth term, which is the third order correction, the third order self-force term, appears in the first subdominant term in the post-Newtonian series for the 3-3 mode. And you can compare this with the 2-2 mode for the PN series. Where the order for this third order self-force term basically appears quite deep in the PN series. And so that gives you some suggestion already that you would expect this to agree better. The second order self-force ought to be better with the 2-2 mode than the 3-3, and that's what we observe. In fact, this gets worse for higher modes like 4-4 and 5-5. One thing we can do is a simple resummation to include some information from the leading PN term. Just very quickly, what we do is we just divide by the leading PN term and then re-expand up to order nu squared and multiply by this leading term. This ensures that this resum flux has this property that it tends to the correct limit in the weak field, and it turns out to do rather well. So you can go back to this plot, and we can add on the resummed flux, just incorporating that just knowledge of the leading post-Newtonian term. And now we see we agree beautifully in the weak field, but also agrees very nicely again in the strong field. Now, in fact, this works surprisingly well, even like Q2, and I've got some plots later if anyone wants to see them to show how well this works. The slow time terms are actually missing from this calculation, so that's why the tick isn't here, but it would be present once we add those on. we do see the sort of correct scaling with the mass ratio. So here, what I'm showing is for a whole variety of different simulations comparing NR against the cell force results. The blue dots show the NR results, and the orange squares show the cell force result. And you see they agree very nicely for the 2-2. They're tending to agree to everything 3-3. Once you subtract the first order cell force, you expect to see a residual which scales as nu cubed. And that's what this reference line here is showing. And you see it here both in the 2-2 and 3-3 mode. And when you further subtract the second order result, you see a residual which scales as nu to the fourth in both. There's quite some noise here. And in fact, I have to fit out a lot of the oscillations in the numerical relativity simulations to even get this level of data. And partially this is probably because we're starting to approach the level of error in the numerical relativity result, because you're dropping down three orders of magnitude from the flux all the way down to the residual here. As I'm sure this could be improved in future. Okay, I know I'm very short on time, so I'm just going to finish with the fluxes for spinning binaries. So as I said, we can actually consider the cases where the binaries are spinning within this restricted class. I won't go over the details, but you also compare between cell force and numerical relativity. We use the same sort of comparison people have done to compare PN and cell force before. And we can take our normal cell force result and add on this spin correction. The spin correction for the spin on the primary, we actually get directly from our second order calculation. And it's also equal to the linear and spin Tucholsky flux. And we can also add the spin on for the spinning secondary, and that's computed. Many groups have been doing that. A group we were involved in does that, but there's also these papers here. We can just add that on as well consistently. So just to show the results before I finish. So here's an example where we now have a spinning secondary. So now the primary has a low spin on it, pretty small. The mass ratio is 6.2 or 6.3 or so. But the secondary is now spinning quite rapidly, a retrograde spin of minus 0.8. And here we can see all the same curves we had before, except the first order result. The green curve is the result without, the second order without any spin corrections. And then when you add on the spin corrections, you see it brings it back into agreement, pretty good agreement with the numerical relativity result. There's obviously some disagreement here in the strong field, but this is a Q6. This is again for the 2-2 mode. And then last plot, this is now we have both components spinning. So the primary and the secondary have got spin about 0.1. This is a mass ratio of Q equals 8. And you can see again, without including the corrections due to the spin on the two components, the green curve is some distance away from the numerical relativity curve. But when you add on those two corrections, in fact, this one sits beautifully on top of the numerical relativity simulation, again, only breaking down when you're about five cycles before the peak of the waveform. Okay, that was a pretty whirlwind tour of a lot of results. We can, of course, discuss these later on. But of course, what happens next? We've only here computed the flux. Our next goal is, of course, to actually compute the waveforms and compare those directly. In all the plots I showed, there was this sort of breakdown of our two-dimensional expansion, so we were to attach the transition to plunge, as well as the ring down and compute complete waveforms. We are very interested now in doing more detailed comparisons between numerical relativity, PN and EOB, for instance. And as Adam mentioned, there's a clear application to modeling intermediate mass ratio in spirals. If we get this good agreement at 1 to 100, 1 to 10, then certainly we get good agreement at 1 to 100. Longer term, of course, this is just quasi-circular binaries in Schwarzschild. We wish to look at eccentric orbits and the extension to Kerr, which people will talk about later on today. So I think I'll finish there. Thank you.
Thank you, Niels. We have about a minute and a half for questions. Yeah, Jonathan.
Hi. Fantastic results, Niels. Congratulations. Do I understand correctly that you're only treating this, the spin on the primary is treated only perturbatively, so the dimensionless spin has to be no more than the perturbative mass ratio.
Yeah, that is.
Whereas
correct,
the spin on the secondary in theory of order unity. Yep. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Barry.
Just to follow up Jonathan's question there, I think the spin in the secondary, we do impose spin supplementary conditions and things, which mean we're really computing things to linear order in that as well. I think. Is that right, Niels?
I think as long as the angular momentum on the secondary is small, and that implies linear order in this case. So, yes. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we're taking the angular momentum of the smaller guy to be mass ratio squared.